why do we create? It's not always out of pure altruism. It's because we want to, right? Because we feel compelled to create something, because we want to enjoy the process and see what comes out of it. And I think that's a big part of what these communities are. They're a form of creative expression.
Hey there. Welcome to Lessons in Creativity, where we'll explore the creative process across different disciplines and learn how to harness this natural part of our human experience. I'm Jenna Massey, your fellow student and host. In this episode, I spoke with Saba Ahmed. In our conversation, I got a chance to hear from someone who's right in the middle of her creative process. Saba was previously chief of staff at a digital media company and is currently intentionally exploring the social wellness space in an effort to help people connect in person with their local communities. You'll hear Saba share what she has learned about community architecture, how she's approaching this time in her life, and what she's learned about herself in the process. Hope you enjoy our episode. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I would love to start with taking you back to your childhood and thinking about how creativity came out when you were around 7, 8, 9. And to the extent that it's also relevant, since we're going to be talking a lot about community, also how community came out at that age.
Yeah. Wow. 7, 8, 9. Okay. This is probably more the latter end of that, but I was really into doing my nails as a kid and as a preteen especially, but I think it started when I was 8 or 9. I had a ton of nail polish and I would do these crazy designs on my nails. And I think it's because I grew up in a relatively conservative Muslim home. And I guess it was my way of self-expression. And I used to tell everyone that I wanted to open up my own nail salon one day. And that's honestly where my entrepreneurial ambitions started. And it stuck with me. Even in high school, I was like, yeah, I'm going to open a nail salon, which I haven't gotten around to doing yet. But that's my first memory of really something unique. And that was for me and a form of creative expression that I could own.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that contrast to the conservative upbringing of your family. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is there anything?
Yeah, I think when you have ways that are limiting to your ability to be creative or express yourself, you find outlets. You find outlets that either are available to you or allowed within the confines of kind of the rules that you're operating within. And I definitely did that with my nails. I did that with writing and blogging later in my life. Yeah. And I don't know, there's a lot more I could say about it, but I do think it definitely shaped my form of creativity. And I think as I've gotten older and become an adult and those confines don't exist in the same way anymore, it still is sometimes a bit of a mental block, I would say. And it makes me second guess certain things that I'm putting out into the world because I had those restrictions for so long.
And then what about community? Just thinking back to early themes in your upbringing, like since that's an interest area of yours right now, I'm curious.
Yeah, my early experiences with community were all around family. So I grew up with a really big extended family. My dad was one of 10. My mom was one of 5. A lot of my cousins were in New York where I grew up. And I think that it showed me the power of community and how beautiful it could be, but also some of the limits when it comes to not necessarily being able to choose your community. I didn't necessarily have cousins my age or always feel as comfortable or happy in those environments as you might think when you're around a lot of family. And I think that wanting to be able to choose my own community is something that came up for me really early on, and find people my age that I could relate to and be able to curate that for myself versus it being decided for me was a very early feeling that I had, I remember.
That's really interesting and makes a lot of sense given what you're focusing on now. So as we shift into your adulthood and how you've started to get more and more interested in community, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about friends of friends and early
experiments that you've run in the community space?
Yeah. So Friends of Friends was something that I started in late 2022. It was started because I really just wanted to throw a party for my friends and something where I could bring all of them together in one place, people from all different walks of my life. Some context is that I've lived in New York my entire life. I went to college here. I worked here after college. Other than a 2-year stint in London, I've been here. And I've gone through many life phases and have formed kind of different types of friendships along the way, but have also had instances where I've grown apart from people or people have moved away. And there's this thing that I think we all do when we live in such a transient city where we replenish our social networks again and again, and you have to. And I definitely found myself needing to do that when I moved back after being in London for 2 years for grad school and after the pandemic. And I was in this place where I was like, I want to bring together the people that I do have and also grow that community together through their friends and this kind of interconnected web that I know. And I did it with a friend of mine who was in kind of the music world a little bit more than I was. And I was like, let's bring both of our friend groups together and see what happens. And so we threw a dance party and then we threw another and another, and it just grew through word of mouth. And I didn't start out thinking that this is going to be a creative expression of myself, but it very much was, because each time we were starting with kind of a blank canvas and an empty room. And it was like, well, what's the experience that I want to create for people with this? What can I really do? And with very little resources or know-how, but just scrappiness and creativity and my imagination to create this four-dimensional art project, essentially.
I'm curious, what do you think was the biggest learning, or what were some of the learnings that you took away from doing Friends of Friends?
Well, it was really interesting when we did a survey of our guests once and asked them, what do you like about our events? Why do you come? What stands out? And I, in my naivety, I thought people would say, oh, the DJs are great. The lineups are amazing. The projections. But almost everyone said the people. And I think my biggest takeaway was, when you create an experience or an event or community, it's maybe 10% about the content of what you're offering and 90% about the people that you're bringing together. Mm. And that's what really makes it unique and special and keeps people coming back.
Interesting. Well, and I'd imagine there's a lot of details that go into the way that people connect within an experience that then makes them reflect back, oh, it's the people, without even noticing all these really intricate, intentional details that have made them connect in that way.
Yeah, yeah. There is a lot of intention setting that you have to do when thinking about the design, I think, to help those connections really happen. And it's something that I wasn't honestly intentional about in the beginning, but I'm trying to be more and more now.
That's awesome. So I think what's really cool about this episode is we're getting the opportunity to zoom in on the creative process while it's happening. So I'd love to have you share a little bit about your journey in the last couple months and what you're focusing on and how you're going about it.
Yeah, so I was recently working as a chief of staff for a digital media company called The Skim. I spent 2 years there and had an incredible experience and was just feeling like I'm ready to be in the driver's seat. I want to try to create something from the ground up and just see what that experience feels like. And I had been thinking about community for a long time. And part of that was driven by Friends of Friends and the feelings that led me to create that experience. Some of it was seeing just what was happening in the world and feeling like there was a massive disconnection happening. All of these macro trends around the loneliness epidemic and people forgetting how to connect in real life post-pandemic. And I was really feeling that myself and also among my friends. And I grew more and more passionate about this problem, this social wellness problem that I saw brewing. And I decided I wanted to just dive deeper and explore that problem and see if there was something that I could offer to help people connect again in person, locally, with their communities. And so that's what I set out to do. And I didn't really start with any kind of strong, specific idea of what the solution would be. I had a mentor who was a former founder herself, and her advice to me was that I should really think about my why. Why do I want to start something? And then just get lost in the problem that I'm trying to solve and let the universe push me into different rooms. And I really took that advice to heart. And so that's what I did. I said, okay, this is the problem, and I'm going to immerse myself in it in every way. I joined all of these different communities in New York City. I started going to events. I would meet people and talk really openly about what I was thinking about, and looked at other companies that were trying to solve the problem in different ways, used their products, went to their events. I talked to a lot of community builders and community seekers. I had, you know, just dozens of interactions around this topic of how do you find a values aligned community? How do you build and manage a community? And that's what I've been immersed in the last few months, and still very much figuring out the specifics of what I want to build, but I've narrowed in a lot, and it's allowed me to really naturally identify where I think some of the potential opportunities are.
I think this is so interesting because it's like, yeah, within the creative process or the innovation process, you're in this like diverging stage where you're going wide, and I love that you're falling in love with the problem without really any like attachment to what might come of it. You're really just trying to go deep and stay open, which involves a lot of trust, first of all, and a lot of bravery to take yourself off of a path and spend the time doing that. Can you talk about any feelings of hesitation, or how did you work through those feelings of, am I really doing this? Am I really going to dedicate time to this? And make that commitment to yourself, because I think that's really admirable.
The first thing is that when I left my job, I stopped working full time. I didn't really take any meaningful time off. And it was intentional because I wanted to make sure that the early part of this experience especially was really fun. That I was going to have an ability for self-discovery and what you might experience by going away for a month and traveling. I wanted to feel that here in New York, wow, in my home, and do this field research, whatever you call it, while honestly thoroughly enjoying myself. And I think the reason that was so important is because I was fully aware of the reality that most startups fail. Right? There is a very high likelihood that whatever I try to do, I won't succeed. And I needed to come to terms with that very quickly if I was going to do it. And I needed to make sure that I was enjoying the process so that if it did fail or didn't go where I thought it was going to go, I would have no regrets because I didn't have any specific, like you said, outcome that I was attached to. And I think that's so important in any type of creation. When I'm creating Friends of Friends events, it's what if nobody comes? This was so fun to put together. Or if only 10 people come, it's still worth it because I created this thing and I love the process. And I think when it comes to going to events and meeting people and community building, like that is just something that would have made me a better human anyway, regardless of what it led me to from a founder perspective.
I love that, falling in love with the process. And what you said about instead of taking a vacation, like you've created something so unique and different for yourself here by just immersing yourself in this new problem, which is, yeah, I love that. So I've noticed that you're starting to share a little bit more publicly what you're doing and what you're finding and how you're going about this time and this process. on Instagram and on LinkedIn a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that is such a, it's almost like a new trend that is coming out in the future of work now that people are needing to and starting to share their ideas and work in public. But it takes a lot of courage to put yourself out there and to share your ideas in that way. So I'm curious, like, how did that start? What's that been like? And if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So a lot of this experience for me has been about pushing myself and putting myself out of my comfort zone and seeing kind of what I'm capable of. And one thing that I've had to be really honest with myself about is that I have a lot of social anxiety, and it's always been one of my biggest blockers. And it's something that I'm, I think, overly concerned about. And I think everyone is to a degree, but how I'm perceived has, I think, been a little bit too much of a blocker for me and for what I want to do next. And so I decided at the start of this year that I'm going to just embrace being cringy and putting things out in the world that I'm unsure about or that make me feel weird or uncomfortable. And I was having a conversation with my friend David Novinsky, who I know as well. He's an incredible community builder in New York and has been a big inspiration to me. And he inspired this idea of Cringe Tuesdays. And for me, Cringe Tuesdays has been making a video of myself talking about community or meaningful connection and posting it on Instagram and asking people for input. It's something that I've never done before, talking to a camera and posting it. And I know there are a lot of people who are so comfortable doing it, and that was just never me. So I knew that for me, this is courage. This is going to push me. It's going to make me do something uncomfortable. And it's a small thing, mm-hmm. but I'm going to have to do much bigger things if I'm going to be a founder. So let's start here and do a little bit every week. And the public accountability has really helped, because now people are like, it's Tuesday, where's your Cringe Tuesday post? It's coming soon. But it's cool because it also, I think, talking publicly about what you're working on and not being precious about it plants seeds. People remember you when it's relevant. And now I have people sending me stuff like, oh, you should go to this event, or you should meet this person, or let me connect you. And that would have never happened if I wasn't randomly putting it out there on a regular basis. I've had people who I don't even know in real life and just follow me on Instagram, connect me with people that I really wanted to meet just because they heard me talking about this and felt it was authentic, which it is.
Yeah. No, that's really incredible. I think, and to see what comes after doing that and of being authentic and putting your authentic message out there, are you finding it gets easier, or does the cringe continue? You're still in the early.
Yeah, I think I'm on week 5 or something like that. It does continue, but it gets easier. Well, last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I did it while outside and walking on the streets of the Upper East Side. And so that was the next level of cringe, because before that, I had only done it at home. I think I'll keep finding ways to make it cringier. And I haven't done a lot on LinkedIn recently, so maybe that's my next frontier. But yeah, I think you have to keep leveling up the cringe. It does get a little bit easier.
But it's also, I love that you said, like, starting small, like you have to start somewhere, and with anything really, like this is a great way to build that muscle. I am learning a lot from watching you and hopefully starting to get involved. Let's all join Cringe Tuesday. Okay, I would love to just talk a little bit about what you've learned in your exploration of community. Like, you talked a little bit about the trends that are prompting this time. What are you seeing from the exploration that you've done?
Yeah, so I think that community is so much more and deeper than what I thought it was going into it. When you first think about community, you think a lot about, well, who are my friends? Who's my romantic partner? These social relationships that we are just used to having around us. But then it's interesting to talk to people that do have romantic partners, do have friends, but still feel this void. And I think what I've learned is it's really about seeking meaning and having meaning and the right kind of type of meaning for where you are in your life and what you need to surround yourself with in that moment, having that around you. And that changes for people as they enter new life phases, as they just evolve as humans. And so a lot of my discovery has been around what makes an experience or a connection meaningful. What does that need to look like? And how do you seek that out in a world where so many interactions are either very transactional or transient? You meet someone for a drink or a dinner or at a networking event. How do you take that to be something of more meaning? Or how do you design an experience where deep connection is a goal? And then my other learning has been, there are these gems of humans who bring people together and create these meaningful connections and find so much meaning in doing that and do it in such a beautiful and authentic way. And that where my kind of search has really led me is, I don't think the future of community is one big happy community. It's a lot of small micro communities that are unique and special in their own ways and run by these incredible community builders who are bringing people into these containers that they're creating and creating these special experiences.
I have also been touched by these community organizers and just the generosity of them. And I think it is very connected to creativity and art, because in a way, creating these events and curating them is an art. And I'm curious, I'm sure you've gone deep into this, but it seems to me a lot of these communities are feeling the tension of, do they turn it into a business? Do they monetize it? And a lot of the organizers that I've seen, it seems like they're really doing it out of the generosity of their spirit and out of the falling in love with the problem and the really being passionate about it. And realizing that if it's going to stay authentic, it's going to need to stay lightly monetized or not monetized. So I'm curious how you're seeing that as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there's a lot of desire to keep these communities authentic and not lose the essence of what they are. And there is a lot of altruism for sure when it comes to the community builders. Often these are people who are natural connectors and are creating something that they wanted to exist in the world, right? So they're doing it for themselves. But we're talking about creativity. I think community is such a powerful form of creative expression. And why do we create? It's not always out of pure altruism. It's because we want to, right? Because we feel compelled to create something, because we want to enjoy the process and see what comes out of it. And I think that's a big part of what these communities are. They're a form of creative expression. I was just at this retreat as part of this community building course that I took, run by Radha Agarwal. She's the founder of Daybreaker, and she calls them community architects. And I love that term because that really what it is. It's curating this multidimensional experience that you want people to have and thinking about what feelings you want to evoke. It's this interactive work of art that is defined by the container you create and the people you bring into it. And so I think that just any art, there's always a question of, well, how should people be compensated for that? Should art be free? Should anyone be able to enjoy it? Or should you expect to have to make it sustainable for the artist? And I think just a lot of people would say now, no, artists should be fairly compensated. I think so should community builders. And I think what's interesting is we pay so much for physical wellness experiences. And this is a social wellness movement, I believe.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to have an experience that fills you up and an experience that has been very meticulously designed to do that and be a good use of your time. And I think we're going to see a lot of shifts in how people think about opening their wallets for things like that in a fair and authentic way. And I think there's a lot of different forms that could take. But I also think that there's a lot of willingness. And when you look at communities that have started to do that, that for a long time were free and have started to lightly monetize, you almost never see pushback because they've demonstrated the value and people believe in it and they believe in the person doing it. And these aren't people that are going to exploit their communities. That's not who they are. But I think there are very kind of natural and fair ways to make it work for everyone.
Wow. Yeah. I love that. I love the term social wellness movement. I feel like that really captures it.
Totally.
Well, and I think what's also been so interesting is, so they're in creativity, there's this concept, great artists steal, right? No idea is original. There are often multiple ideas combined together. We've seen it in business, in songwriting, and like Silicon Valley, a lot of like one company came out, then the next. It feels like there's that element is really happening in the community world in New York and perhaps other cities. But can you talk about a little bit about that, how you're seeing maybe like different community organizers be inspired by one another and just keep taking things to the next level?
It definitely is happening. And I think it can be a really beautiful thing because there is still such a big need, right? Some of these communities, events sell out and people who want to go can't always go and they're not always accessible. They're not in every neighborhood. And it's really a challenge to think through, like, how do I evolve and grow this while maintaining the what's special about it and the intimacy of what it is and not wanting to go from 30 people to 100 people overnight because that fundamentally changes it. So we do need more and every architect is going to construct it in a slightly different way. And that's important and that's special. At the same time, I think that we should support the communities that already exist before necessarily jumping to start new ones. When I started my exploration, I did start thinking maybe I should start a different community. And it was only realizing that, wait, so many people are doing this already in beautiful ways. Let me learn from them. Let me talk to them. Let me understand what they're doing and how I can support them before I try to replicate in some way. And I think that both routes are important. And what I really love to see is community builders connecting with one another because it's not, there's no competition really. Everything is so unique, but there is so much learning to be had. I've had the pleasure of being in rooms full of community builders quite a few times in the last few weeks. And it's so fascinating what you can unlock by brainstorming these things, because this is not something that has a playbook. I see a lot of community builders relying on each other to learn and, you know, cross-pollinate ideas and be like, okay, I really have a lot in common with this person. We're going to all the same events. That's a beautiful thing too. And it recreates this idea of a third place where you have those touch points.
I love that you said support them rather than first jumping to create your own. That's such a great point. And to your end contributes to they should be compensated, they should be supported. Yeah, because they're really giving us so much.
Yeah, just I think it's interesting also that people like to gatekeep a little bit when it comes to communities and events. And I totally get that, especially when there's an event you like going to and it gets sold out. You don't necessarily want to tell everyone. But at the same time, it should be known. We should spread the word. And so it is a balance. And I think that we have to give grace to these communities as well as they figure out that balance. But I'm a big believer in if you really love something and you think it would be good for other people, then share it. Be be abundant in your mindset that there will be more and it will only help add to the movement and add to the fuel, and there'll be space for everyone.
So you talked a little bit about sometimes running into the same people and connecting and deepening relationships. And at the beginning, you talked about wanting to relate in different ways. How have you seen intentional experience design and experience architecture facilitate connections between people and ultimately help solve this problem of meaning?
There's so many things that you can do to go there with people in a short period of time if you design an experience in that way. And I think it's a lot of what you read about in The Art of Gathering, for example, which is a great book about community building. It's a lot of thinking about rituals and how you want people to come into an event and feel transported in some way. Radha talks about it a lot in her book Belong as well, creating these moments of co-creation with the community, because that's what events are, especially events where there's participation. How do you get your community to feel like they're in a bubble where they can be really authentic and share in a way that they might not with people that they already know super well? And I think there were a lot of examples of that in this retreat that I went to. I spent 3.5 days with a group of 30 people who I'd never met before. And by the end of it, I felt like I knew a lot of them better than I know some of my closest friends. Wow. And it's because we started with this ritual of really stating our intention for being there. Mm. And we were given a little bit of dried tobacco leaves to sprinkle into a bonfire and then some more to sprinkle throughout this land that we were staying in. And it felt like such a portal that we were going through in that moment of, okay, now I'm here and I'm going to really lean into it and be open-minded and put all of my kind of limiting beliefs to the side. And I think there's versions of that in shorter events too, where you come in and the environment is designed to be a different type of experience. It's very intimate. Maybe you're in someone's living room, or maybe your shoes are off, and maybe you have a conversation card that prompts you, or something that you're writing down that's actually like a very deep kind of thing that you've been holding in, and you're immediately like putting it out. And that's the first step into this portal that you're going through. And then you keep people there and then have a kind of neat way at the end, exit ritual that kind of takes them out of it. When I go to one of David's events and he hands me a little card at the end when I'm leaving, like that's such a beautiful exit ritual. And then I take it home and open it and reflect on the experience I just had at one of his podcast mixers. There's a lot of elements of design that I think can go into creating that. And you have to think about all of the senses that someone's going to experience in the feeling that you want to evoke, and then also model that behavior as the host or the community architect.
Those are great examples, and rituals so powerful within that. And then what about identity? Sometimes these events and communities are, you're entering a world of strangers, right? And that kind of frees you from any identity attachment that you might have or that others might have of you. How do you see that playing into the design of these events?
I think that when you go into an event where people don't know you, you can share a sliver of yourself, but like a very deep sliver. You can go really deep into a super specific thing, like maybe your family or how you think about friendship or a big life decision that you've had to make recently that's super loaded without necessarily sharing kind of the breadth of who you are. And that is sometimes freeing in a way, because you don't need to go there. You don't need to have a 2-hour download with someone about this is me and where I come from and everything that I'm bringing with me into this event. And you can just say something that is maybe loaded and very deep and a very deep sliver, but it's just a sliver and it can be contained within that. And you don't necessarily feel the need to have to explain yourself beyond that. And that's different sometimes than if you were to drop a bomb like that, a dinner with people that you've known for 20 years, that dinner might go all night because follow-up questions will tell me everything. And it comes from a place of care, but not wanting to exhaust ourselves with those conversations lead us sometimes to not having them at all. And that's also not right. And so it can be very freeing to go into these rooms and say something that you've been holding so deep, but something really specific and in some ways small, but very heavy for you that you can just put out there and release into the world without having to have it weigh you down for a very long period of time. And that's why I think start and end times are so important, knowing that, okay, I'm going to have this really deep experience where I'm going to either really open up my mind and listen or speak about something, but then I'm going to go home and it's going to end at 9 o'clock and I'm just going to sit with that. That can make it a little bit more freeing, like having that constrained time box.
Yeah. And you spoke earlier about it being like a third place for us, where it's the space and the conditions are set so that we can share in that way, almost a like a religious setting or a therapy setting, but done in community and in reimagined, really.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see how that can bring us closer together. If you and I were at an event and we didn't know each other and you got up and spoke about something really vulnerable that you had been through, I would feel connected to you in a really meaningful way. Even if I didn't bring up what you spoke about, if I went and spoke to you afterwards, I would have a greater level of empathy and understanding and interest in wanting to connect and how I would engage with you after that. And I think that's what these rituals and designing an experience can create, is just that little bit of vulnerability that can lead to a deeper connection than what you might have in a more transient setting.
So you've been on this journey now for a couple months, and really brave journey that you're on of experimenting, researching, immersing yourself fully. What have you learned about yourself in this?
So much. I think one of the biggest learnings, and it's quite a vulnerable one to speak about, but I have learned that it's a lot easier for me to break promises to myself than it is for me to break them to other people. Wow. And I have had to really sit with that and think about, why is that? Why don't I give myself more value in a way? It's been a lot of really changing the way that I work. And part of the Cringe Tuesdays and the public accountability is designing for those limits that I have and pushing myself outside of them. But that's been a big one. I think it's really telling when you're the owner of your own time and how you choose to spend it and how you choose to prioritize yourself and what's important to you. And that's a little bit of the danger of being in this kind of flow phase where you just go with it, because I've had to, sometimes I do get pulled in directions that aren't necessarily right. And I have to go back to, okay, wait, why am I doing this? What do I believe in? How do I want to spend my time? And recenter. So a lot of recentering, a lot of really learning about my own fears and challenging them, confronting them, finding ways to come to terms with them. And a lot of also just being honest with myself about who I am. When I started and I looked at other founders and I was like, okay, that's what a founder looks like. I need to be more like that. I need to be louder and higher energy and more confident and all of these things. And I've realized that's not the answer. It's about really understanding who I am and the energy that I bring to things and what my own kind of personal style is and how to bring that out in the most authentic way and trust that people will value that and appreciate it versus trying to have a goal of becoming this different version of what I think a person who's doing what I'm doing should look like. And appreciating that maybe my approach is different and better in some ways for me. But yeah, there's been a lot of learnings.
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot in there. And even the first point you said of it's easier to break promises to yourself than to others circles back to your whole theme of community, right? Because I think that is such a universal experience that so many of us have. Well, to wrap up, just curious, what advice would you give for someone that is wanting to be a founder or wanting to start getting involved with different communities?
I would say that always prioritize what you genuinely are interested in and want to do. Don't try to start the thing or be in the room that you think that you should be in, but really ask yourself and explore through trial and error what actually feels really good. What are the things that you spend time on that leave you feeling more energized than when you went into them versus things that make you feel drained? And really monitor that, because that's what life is about, right? Is, just finding the experiences that fill us up. And if you can find that through community or creation or starting a business, whatever it is, that's always what I look at and lean towards. It's, okay, this feels good. Let's keep doing more stuff like this. And then you can release any attachment to outcomes because you're enjoying the process.
Yeah, love it. Well, thank you so much, Saba, for being here. Really appreciate it. And I learned a lot. So
yeah, thank you for the beautiful questions. I really enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Saba Ahmed. Let me know what you thought of it and what lessons you took away by leaving a comment on the Lessons in Creativity Instagram page. Thanks so much, and stay tuned for more lessons.